Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRue Show. It's Saturday, April 29th, 2006. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I welcome you to our hour-long show. We're the weekly show on Saturday from 3 to 4 Eastern Time. And I'm very glad to say I have no in-studio guests today because we have guests from coast to coast, literally, who are literally where the action is right now. And what I'm referring to is the fact that, as Mr. LaRouche has been saying and said on Thursday, the 27th of April, at an international webcast, we are in the midst of the worst economic crisis in history. We have to take action. We have to get people to face reality. He met with many people. We can hear a firsthand report of that soon. And also, let me say that Mr. LaRouche has just filed a new paper. I invite you to watch the websites to get this in a matter of hours, maybe the next 24 hours. It's called How the World Has Changed: The Characteristics of the Current Crisis. So back to what are we going to do about it? Let me welcome onto the show the people who are right in the midst of rallies, conventions, and so forth. I'll start with the Pacific Coast because we have in Sacramento, California, where the Democratic Party annual state convention is taking place, Harley Schlanger and Mike Steger. Harley, you're there?
Yes, Marcia. Hi.
Hi. Welcome. And everyone, know you need no introduction. You know that you're the co-host, and now you're off-site in the midst of everything. But Mike Steger, I welcome you, and where are you exactly?
I'm in the Sacramento Convention Center in Sacramento, California.
Terrific. And you people may know you from other occasions and times, but you were with the LaRouche Youth Movement. That how strong is the LaRouche Youth Movement presence, would you say, there at the convention?
It's the strongest presence they've got in the convention right now. We've got about 140 young people strong, and as we currently speak, I think the 3,000 member state convention is being addressed by 140 member youth movement Bach chorus with the Jesu Minor Freude.
Oh wow! Okay, well, keep that in your ears and in your mind. And we go to the East Coast. We have in Washington D.C., where there's been, in fact, there's an ongoing week of action. But we have two people in the LaRouche Youth Movement office. We welcome Danny McCreadys. You're there, right?
Yes, I am, Marcia.
And with you, Miles Robinson.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. And I will say right at the outset that Mid-Continent in Lansing, Michigan today has been is taking place a rally. It began 2 o'clock Eastern Time of especially union workers, but the public at large. It's been organized for as a mass rally for the American dream in terms of stopping the shutdown and economic crisis rolling across the country and instead taking emergency measures. Now, this was very much organized by several United Auto Workers locals, like the one in Adrian, Michigan, John Clark, Mr. Reynolds, Mr. Reyes, many others. And the LaRouche movement there is going strong. And in the second half of our hour-long show, we do hope to have a first-hand on-the-scene update for 5 minutes or so that we'll see about in a while. But so rather than take more time now, I want to stress, although I have to put one pitch in, speaking of the crisis of our economy, the LaRouche PAC has issued a DVD, an hour-long video, that is a film, documentary, of how bad the crisis is, what's to be done about it, and the question of retooling auto, saving the capacity that's there in the plants and the skills and the communities around the country, but especially in the upper Midwest. Several thousand were made, and I recommend people get that. You can go on LaRouchePAC.com to see about it, or you can call. I'll be giving more information. But many of the economic animations that help bring to life what we're facing are there, as well as on the websites done by the LaRouche Youth Movement and others. And LaRouche just commissioned in the last 24 hours, 36 hours, I'll say, Thursday evening, the 27th of April, that we should assay literally the floor space, the machine tool capacity, the depth of skilled workforce that's there in the states of Michigan, Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, Indiana, Kentucky, Missouri, and elsewhere in the country, Southern California, For make it clear, find out the dimensions, make this clear, drive this home, literally the next few days and weeks, that we're going to stop the shutdown and know what the parameters are for retooling and for ramping up the economy again. So we'll be in touch with people participating by email. We'll want to get your emails during the show for our guests, but also stay in touch. We'll discuss this more next week, May 6th, if not soon thereafter. Harley, would you give us the overview from where you stand out there in California?
Well, the whole situation was shaped by Lynn's webcast on April 27th, but actually it was laid out a week earlier when Lynn put out his warning that we've now had the break in the financial system that he had been warning was coming. What he's been saying is that the break has occurred. The dual effects of, on the one hand, the hyperinflation in commodities, the fact that copper prices, for example, went up $1,000 a ton in less than a month, the fact that the housing bubble is about to pop, that they're caught between Scylla and Charybdis now. If they raise interest rates higher to stop the inflation, they're going to blow out the banking system through the collapse of the real estate market and all the funny money financial derivatives dependent on that. If, on the other hand, they try to keep the housing situation from blowing out by keeping interest rates low, then we're already in a hyperinflationary regime on the commodities. So with that warning from Lynn, we saw a series of reactions to it, with, on the one hand, an escalation against Cheney, a recognition across the board that we're in a zone of turbulence, which is a precursor to a financial blowout of the whole banking system, and that you've got to the fight over policy is now at the forefront. Now, what Lynn did in the webcast is make clear that the issue is the revival of Franklin Roosevelt's policies, represented today by Lynn and the LaRouche Youth Movement, versus a revival of fascism under the direction, on the one hand, of Schultz and the Republican Party through Cheney and others, but increasingly their efforts to contain the Democratic Party through Felix Rohatyn and his cohorts at the Democratic Leadership Council, pushing the Democratic Party to reject Roosevelt and adopt a different form of privatization, which in fact is not different at all. Rohatyn and Schultz have been working together since the fascist Pinochet coup in Chile in 1973. Now, I'd like to ask Michael to give a description of this battle, because what we're seeing in Sacramento is a grouping in the Democratic Party which basically knows there's a crisis, recognizes that Cheney and Bush have to go, but really have no serious alternatives other than to say we need health care, we need education, all the right things, but no oomph behind it, fighting against the influence of Rohatyn, who is there, not personally, but is there in the form of an attempt to contain this into some kind of mild infrastructure program, which is essentially a cover for privatization. So it's really become Roosevelt versus the synarchists in the form of the LaRouche movement versus the Schultz, Rohatyn, 33-year traveling fascist circus. So, Michael, why don't you give us an on-the-scene report, including some of what we were able to do to indicate that we're inside the party in terms of the addressing some of the caucuses.
Yeah, the build-up to the state convention has come from Lynn's, as Harley pointed out, Lynn's forecast two Thursdays ago. And we got a cadre school out in the Sacramento area, followed by a week of action in San Francisco. And so the preparation for this has probably been 2 months, of which now is culminating in the Democratic State Convention this weekend. So there's definitely been a ton of preparation. About 140 members of the LaRouche Youth Movement from the West Coast, from Seattle, Portland, San Diego, Los Angeles, and the Bay Area, have now converged in Sacramento. So the way the itinerary works, on Friday they've set up these caucuses, which have the African American Caucus, the Veterans Caucus, the Asian American Caucus. And so as a youth movement, well prepared to discuss the kinds of economic policies Lynn's put forward, and really understanding that the way Rohatyn has put forth his solutions to make the states and the nation beholden to Wall Street financing institutions is basically a way of selling fascism on the soft side, and that that's going to lead to the destruction of the nation as a whole. So we've had an opportunity yesterday. We had the I think it started with the African American Caucus with Quincy O'Neill and the candidate for Democratic state chair from Texas, Keisha Rogers. They had a chance both to speak at the African American Caucus and make the point that the Democratic Party has to return to a Franklin Roosevelt policy. It has to incorporate the younger generation back into the Democratic Party for this nation to survive and recreate itself in the constitutional tradition of people like Hamilton and now today LaRouche. We also had a chance at the Veterans Caucus, myself and of actual veteran, Tobias Tillman. We both had a chance to address the Veterans Caucus. I put forth the Franklin Roosevelt, the need to return to Franklin Roosevelt's policies, the need for economic development, which provoked a response from the audience which was typical of kind of the dying nature of the Democratic Party as it stands right now, which is, what are you going to do for veterans? Which gave Tobias Tillman an opportunity to address the fact that right now, under the Democratic Party's influence of Felix Rowatin, the military is being destroyed, is turned into a private mercenary type of organization, which is the exact same type of model that Adolf Hitler was using to run the kind of fascist policies in the 1930s. And so this drew a huge reaction from the Veterans Caucus. He was swarmed afterwards by 10 or 15 veterans who grabbed the new LPAC pamphlet on the private armies. And so besides those types of interventions, we had the Asian American Caucus, which is now opening up, the Latino Caucus, and a number of other caucuses that just made this kind of intervention we've made this year a distinct type of intervention versus the years previous, where our table downstairs under the Franklin Roosevelt Legacy Democratic Club has caused a significant discussion amongst a number of attendants at this year's convention.
Michael, let me just ask you a question. Sure. In the discussions that are going on with the delegates, are you getting a sense now that people are from our intervention figuring out what Rowatin is and that the Roosevelt issue has been brought to the fore?
Most definitely. There's a, just to make one point right now, Nancy Pelosi gave an address to the Women's Caucus this morning where she explicitly brought up Eleanor Roosevelt and the tradition of women in this nation, but also Franklin Roosevelt's economic policies. But the problem we face in the Democratic Party right now is that when she addresses the main floor of the state convention, she does not address the need to return to Franklin Roosevelt's policies. So it's in the leadership of the Democratic Party nationally and in the state, there's clear recognition of what direction the nation must go in. But to actually go publicly and educate the population, there's still a certain denial and refusal to address the nature of the crisis.
All right.
Now let me one additional question, Marcia, for Michael. We've had a chorus out virtually the whole time singing quite beautifully. I heard the Yaesu this morning, but a lot of political canon. Have you picked up any reaction to the choral work in terms of breaking people out of the otherwise sterile, vacuous culture of Sacramento?
Yeah. Well, I think in general, the chorus work has brought, as it did last year as well, it's created in the minds of many Democratic attendants a sense of that politics can remain on a pragmatic level. And we've got a few canons that address fascist Felix Rowatin's nature in the Democratic Party. And I think as we speak, as I said before, we had entered into the convention center to, as the attendants left for lunch, a full session of the Yaesu, the Ave Verum Corpus, and then a set of political canons to really create a different type of cultural condition in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I can tell you, Marcia, other than what we're doing, you have Steve Westley, who's the controller of the state, who's a candidate for governor, who put $22 million of his own money in. Apparently for $22 million, you can buy a few college kids and some orange T-shirts, and they can walk around chanting, Steve, Steve, Steve. So clearly... just let me add one point on the what's going on, what you might say at some of the top levels of the party.
Please.
People who in the past were familiar with us, they saw a growing number of people at each successive year. But to some extent, there was some dismissiveness. Well, you know, these are LaRouche, these are hardcore, they'll grow up, they'll change. What I'm getting now is people asking, can your guys support my candidate? Can we sit down and discuss this? Someone who's introduced a resolution to impeach Bush and Cheney that's been introduced in the California legislature just said, look, all I know about LaRouche is I see your people here. There are more and more of them, and you must be doing something right. And he specifically asked that we put some pressure on the Speaker of the House to get his resolution to the floor. So there's a growing recognition that it's not just that we're growing, that we're more vocal, that the members have become just much more confident as political leaders, but that there's no other leadership in the party. And I think that there's no greater indication of that than the fact that not only are we participating in the caucuses, but the people who are running them are asking our members to join and participate and show them how to introduce ideas. Because otherwise, these caucuses are a dwindling number of people who sit there and they have one after another candidate come up and talk about how great it is to be Irish or how much they've done for African Americans or gays or this or that. And at one point, when Quincy addressed the African American caucus, he raised the question. He said, some of you are wondering about the LaRouche Youth Movement. Let me ask the people in this room who are members of the LaRouche Youth Movement to stand. And I don't know, maybe there were 50 people in the room at the time. And close to half of the people in the room were members of the LaRouche Youth Movement. And it had an audible effect. You heard gasps from the people on the podium. And so the question of diversity and the usual nonsense that the Democrats talk about, the real issue is bringing people, bringing a cross-section. In California, you've got a growing Hispanic population, a growing Asian population, and it's not surprising that we're recruiting in every single grouping because these are young people who see themselves as young people who need a future primarily, not so much as what's going to be done for the Asian community or my community. Now, one final point. There will be a march on Monday in Los Angeles, a follow-up of the immigration marches.
Right, and this is, I think it's also national, too, to a degree.
It's nationwide.
Yes.
They're saying there may be 500,000 people in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And in talking to some of the people involved, you ask them, well, okay, besides opposing the otherwise fascist immigration policy that's coming out of Tancredo and some of the Republicans, what are you going to do to turn this into an active continuing movement? Because there's talk we can revive the civil rights movement. The only question is, to do what?
Yeah.
And that's why the LaRouche Youth Movement is having such a profound impact in California, in Washington, D.C., among people in the Midwest who are trying to fight to save the auto industry and U.S. machine tool capability, because no one else has a clue as to how to address the younger population.
Right. Well, we may continue to come back to some of that, but let's turn to Washington, D.C. with Danny and Miles, because they are, among many other things, right, you were running an interference operation to head off Felix Rowett and be able to continue to run loose in this country. Do you want to start with that?
Well, yeah, he had an event here in Washington, and we had written some political canons, and we had prepared for this event. This is the second time he showed his face in the recent couple weeks here in D.C., and the first time he had this press conference at the National Press Club, and this was open to the public. We got a bunch of members of the youth movement in there. There's also a question from, I think it was Larry Freeman from the National Center.
Yeah, Paul Gallagher,
and,
right.
Mm-hmm. Paul Gallagher, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And basically he was cornered on this question of FDR and what have you. So, you know, seeing as he's really trying to push this idea and get support for his fascist infrastructure policy, the need for him to come out and voice his message, especially amidst the stir that we've created here in Washington around his name, is pretty great. So he did it under the protection of a $900 price tag for a dinner that Danny actually got into. And
this was $900 a plate you're supposed to pay?
Yeah, it was a lunch, actually. It was a lunch at the National Engineering Association or something.
Uh-huh. No, it was the American Society of Civil Engineers conference.
All right.
And
if you want to go into that, because I know you were there.
I can just give a brief account of you know, what he said and what the content of the meeting was.
And these are the people who build, is that right, Danny? They build the bridges and the hospital wings and everything else, right? This guy, Roetten, is going to speak to.
Yeah, these are the guys who put out the famous report card, which the president of the American Society of Civil Engineers mentioned in the beginning of the meeting, that America's infrastructure is rated at a D across the board on it's the National Infrastructure Report Card. And what's interesting is that here you have this conference where the president is saying, you know, we need voices, we need leadership, we need solutions, which is all true, but how much more tragic it is that they would be foolish enough to invite Roetten to come and speak. So I was able to sneak in, which was surprising enough, but there were about 80 or so people there, and for the first 2 hours, there were just a series of presentations on just the nature of infrastructure, just some of the crisis that was going on. Then at about 1 o'clock, Felix Roetten came in, and he was being introduced by the moderator to speak. And as he was being introduced, I was very relieved to hear in the background all of a sudden, you know, a huge chorus. And the event was inside. It was called the Reagan Center, in a small room, but it's also an open building where people could go and have this many different things going on at once. So about 40 of the youth organizers had come into the Reagan building and out in the hallway, just kind of reassembled and started singing a chorus with our political canons, which we wrote, and got some from the West Coast as well on Roetten. So from inside the event, everybody in the event heard the singing coming out, and people were kind of chuckling. And I'm sure Roetten was able to hear his name, you know, the one canon, Roetten, you know, over and over again. So the moderator actually introduced Roetten, saying, this is the first time I've had the pleasure to introduce somebody with a chorus in the background. So that kind of set the stage. But yeah, it's tricky because Roetten is not like Cheney in the sense of everybody hates the guy. He's very tricky and slick on covering up his actual intentions. So he's able to kind of throw around. He even mentioned a national bank. So he's able to throw around the catchphrases, you know, that people will sometimes associate with LaRouche's policy. But after he spoke, the first 15 minutes actually about Big Mac and how what he learned in Big Mac in New York City, when he was in control of that, was a valuable lesson for what he sees he could now be applied to other cities and the nation at large through an infrastructure program. But I actually got to ask a question, and I basically just went through, for the audience at least, what it was about Big Mac that Roetten didn't mention, and about how the different minority and poor areas of the city were completely shut down and strangled, where Roetten's only intention was to pay off the usurious debt that was used to strangle New York City by the New York investment banks. And then at the end, I kind of threw in to Roetten what the difference was between his policy, or his fake infrastructure policy, and that of LaRouche's, which has been going for over 20 years. And all Roetten could muster up was a difference of opinion. That was his statement or his comment. But I think it really kind of shook him up a little bit, because he had definitely heard the chorus earlier, and he'd run into another organizer of ours earlier as well. And I'm sure he's seen our organizing all around the city of D.C. anyway. But I don't know if Miles wants to go through, I think on the way out, he was also hit.
Yeah, I was part of the chorus, too. And what we did, essentially, was we got right outside the building where he was, where the glass was, this glass partition. And we sang these songs until we got escorted out by some very angry security guards, and we sang the whole way that we went, so it must have had a nice fade effect in the auditorium. And while we were getting let out, I just kind of ducked back into the center, and I pulled my hat over my eyes, and I just kind of sat in a corner reading an EIR, waiting for Roetten to come out. I had to wait for like half an hour by the time that he eventually did come out, and he had a few people around him, and I approached him right after he left the building, and I asked him, what do you think the potential is of the Democrats actually adopting his fascist ploy to co-opt LaRouche's infrastructure plans? He says, I don't know. We'll have to see. And so that immediately struck me. And then I just started, I said, you know, I basically briefed him on everything that we know about him. I said, look, they're probably not going to adopt this fascist ploy, seeing that they know your involvement in the Pinochet coup with George Shultz in the 1970s. I elaborated on that a little bit, his role through ITT and Lazard, et cetera. And then I spoke about his privatization scheme for the military that we exposed in this piece, Halliburton's War, and this conference that he had up at Middlebury College, where he was pushing for the privatization of our military explicitly. And then I reiterated that this is a Nazi policy. I asked him, I said, Felix, I said, why is it that a Jew has such an affinity for Hitler's policies? And I asked him again, I said, come on, Felix. I said, why, Felix, a Jew, come on. And the whole time he was just stunned. He had this really stunned look on his face. I asked him, I just developed some more of the stuff that we've been exposing about him. Then I posed this paradox to him. I said, why do you think that LaRouche has this growing youth movement, and that there is a future for this Franklin Roosevelt legacy in the Democratic Party? That kind of freaked him out a little bit. His shoulders writhed when I mentioned the future for Roosevelt and the Democratic Party. And then I just basically told him that there's no way that he's going to be successful in pushing this, and that the United States needs to move on from this kind of this neo-feudalism and this fascist policy that he's very overtly proposing. And then by this time, we had gotten to his vehicle, and he got into his vehicle, and I just put my face right by his window and just kept reiterating. I said, Felix, you're done. You're done. You're done. And I just followed the car for a while to freak him out, and he was definitely affected. And it'll be interesting to see what his next move is going to be, because I mean, what essentially we've done is we have exposed his lie. So when your lie is publicly exposed, how do you outflank that? Because it's not, you know, as though he's got to come out and counteract something. We've exposed truthfully what he's been doing, and now he's pretty immobile. So,
Marcia, what Lynn was saying last night is that we've got to make it clear to the Democrats that any Democrats who choose Roatan over LaRouche, they're finished. They're going down. That the party as a whole can only succeed to the extent it just doesn't distance itself, but repudiates Roatan and these fascist policies. And I think that's the significance of the deployments we're doing nationally today, this weekend, as a culmination of a very incredible week of action nationally.
Right. Well, absolutely. And Harley, you may continue that in a few minutes, but since Mike Steger has to resume just what you're saying, all the activities there in the convention center, Mike, do you want to continue to say any closing words about what's going on, or just amplify anything, or what you anticipate, or important points right there from the convention center in Sacramento?
Well, just to conclude, I'll say that this has come. The week of action we had in San Francisco was a preparation to really break the kind of the liberal stronghold that the Democratic Party or certain banking influences in the Democratic Party have maintained over the last three decades against LaRouche's influence. We had incredibly successful deployments that shocked many of the organizers from the Bay Area at the potential for success we have are really organizing this constituency around LaRouche's ideas. And the Democratic State Convention is also indicative of that same type of intention and success we're having as a youth movement.
Thank you very much.
And we'll be culminating events with a town meeting tonight in Sacramento, a couple blocks down from the convention center. And we have some indication that some candidates and others are anxious to come and appear to try to impress the LaRouche youth that they're getting the message.
That is how we're having shift upon shift, aren't we?
So, Mike, keep up the good work down there. I'll see you in a little while.
Thanks, Holly. Thanks, Marcia.
And
have a good
thank
day.
You for being on. And
okay.
What I'll do, since we have this little break, is make a couple of program announcements briefly and then resume with Washington, D.C. and with Harley in Sacramento. And also, our control room says that we will get a call in 5 to 7 minutes from Lansing, Michigan. On a good line so that we can have a direct report of this big rally in Lansing, Michigan. And so, just to confirm, this is the LaRue Show. It's April 29th, 2006. We are weekly via live internet from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time out of Leesburg near Washington, D.C. and Virginia. And those of you on the internet know we are at www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. We welcome those of you participating on the phone, on the organizer's conference call, and listening in otherwise in the course of the week. As you know, this is archived. And I stress again that two things. One thing is to take advantage of the fact that the LaRouche video or international webcast is archived for you to see or to listen to. It was April 27th, 2006, and you can see that on larouchepac.com, www.larouchepac.com. And also be sure to make a point of getting and circulating, among several things, this new DVD on retooling auto for world economic revival, and certainly the pamphlet, some of which people have mentioned during this show, Halliburton Wars, the George Shultz, Felix Rowetton cabal to privatize, well, to actually turn us into what? A warmed-over version of the British East India Company, the kind of globalist fascist form for today. And I'll just throw in here, Harley and our friends in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you know that George Shultz himself has penned an article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal decrying how awful it is that people in the military are attacking the administration, which is practically the George Shultz administration. So good, so much for him. Let me just say right now that we do, I think if our control room confirms, we have someone on from Lansing by cell phone from the rally. And the best thing they can do is just give us an on-the-scene first-hand report. Go ahead. This will be someone from the LaRouche Youth Movement. Go right ahead right now. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's probably, you know, several thousand people here. Not sure exactly the number, but Granholm spoke a little while ago, and it was mostly, you know, very speech on just to attract an audience that would re-elect her in the upcoming upcoming elections.
The governor of Michigan, then. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the governor. And, you know, generally, all these thousand people, just about all of them have some of our literature in hand. One of the interesting things is talking to a bunch of the youth is that they recognize that Granholm's speech is just like all the other ones that she gives. And it has absolutely no direction on a solution, which is what we're bringing to these to everybody there. The retooling concept is not really in anybody's mind, so we're bringing it to them. And also the question of financing infrastructure, LaRouche's method versus Felix Rowetton's is one of the things that we're organized around. A lot of people we have. It's about 10 of the boomers from Chicago with close to 15 youth here. And, you know, generally, the youth are, without a doubt, more responsive right here. There's actually a group of high school students from the youth in government who are pretty excited about what they see. If you have any questions to ask.
Yes, let me throw it open. Is this Joe, by the way? Can you identify yourself?
Yeah, it is.
Joe Smalley, then, in Lansing, Michigan. And Danny or Miles or Harley, do you want to draw anything out and ask Joe while he can stay on, please?
Well, sure. What is the proportion? Is it mostly UAW organizing workers, or are there also people, general population, coming out to support?
Yeah, that's a good question. It is mostly, I'd say UAW, at least the people that I spoke to. But at the same time, there's just regular workers. You know, I've spoke to a nurse. There's some people here just to try to support Stabenow, or re-election of Granholm, I was saying. But Mostly people in unions and some people from the general population.
Hey, Joe.
Thanks. We have a little interference, but keep trying. Yeah, go right ahead.
What's the general reaction to this idea of retooling the auto sector?
Well, I haven't gotten any negative responses to it. I think it's interesting that of the speeches that I've heard, I haven't been listening to them all, but there's been consistently people speaking, you know, other than this cheap entertainment that they throw at you. But nobody has mentioned Walter Reuther and his proposal that he put out back in 1946 or 45, right after really following the war. And so I've been bringing that up to people. And when upon hearing the name Reuther, you know, all these members, especially the UAW, will, you know, immediately jump their, sort of get their attention very quickly. And, you know, generally the response is very good on that, on the rail and nuclear, which the nuclear question also, you know, hand in hand with the retooling has been relatively well responded to.
And do you, are some of the union leaders speaking as that's what's happening and then they're going to announce anything, or this is what's they're making speeches?
Yeah, they're speaking. Most of the speeches are, you know, all about the same Bush bashing and the American dream over and over again. Nothing really outstanding. Something interesting that we're the youth, about the 15 of us, have the opportunity to sing at the close of the program. So we're going to sing the Battle Cry of Freedom and some of the Roatan cannons. So that's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, a few minutes probably.
Well, that's great. Maybe we shouldn't keep you anymore. Do you want to say anything in closing?
No, I mean, I think that wraps it up. Does that? And I can take one more question. Does that?
Okay. Harley, do you have anything to ask?
Well, I think it's interesting, the question of Reuther, the question of Roosevelt, that under these conditions of collapse, it's becoming clear to people that there's no alternative in rhetoric. But the question that we have to win the fight on is this idea of the FDR legacy. And I just wondered if there's a sense that Joe has that people are responding. We have the prolegomena from LaRouche, the Franklin Roosevelt legacy. I assume we're getting that out and we're getting reaction to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been, you know, leading with sort of who fears Roosevelt, and most of the people having no idea who Felix Roatan is, at least that I've spoken with, that's a jump into the question. That one woman said she thought I was a brave soul coming in here with Roosevelt, with these Roosevelt pamphlets, the platforms. But she, you know, she almost fell over because she said Roosevelt's her hero. The precedent that Roosevelt and Reuther set out for is that's the most important thing, I think, to communicate this point. It is taken well. Mm-hmm. I haven't had any, you know, outbursts.
So you're recalling people to their heritage. I also, one of the organizers, John Clark, head of the UAW local in Adrian 2031, Michigan. He was saying that Adrian wouldn't be there, but President Kennedy in 1961 made sure the plant wasn't closed down. Does anyone relate to that? Did Mr. Clark talk about it?
Has Mr. Clark said anything? Well, I haven't heard anything about this.
Okay, he raised it at the webcast. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Okay. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Joe, have a great time. Sounds like you
All
are.
Right. Thanks.
I'm glad you're there. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Marcia, I think it's interesting, and we had some of the young people at the California Convention, including Stanford and Berkeley types, who were sitting around reading our pamphlets, and our organizers overheard them saying, I don't understand why they're talking about Roosevelt. This is before computers. The world has changed. And this idea that I was interested in Danny and Miles' response from what they saw in the Congress, if we're beginning to get a shift in that in the Congress, because you have this idea that has been put out there by the new Democrats, the ones who rode the tech revolution. For example, this guy Steve Wesley, who's running for governor of California, he made $250 million on eBay. He's one of the founders of eBay. Uh-huh. And this is his whole policy for California, is we are going to hook everyone up to the broadband. The broadband is the future. And as my colleague Jeff Steinberg said the other day, broadband, what's he talking about, the Dixie Chicks? So this idea that globalization has changed everything and FDR is outmoded, what are we finding, Miles and Danny, from the lobbying you did? Are you getting a sense that we're breaking through on this in the Congress?
Well, I think with the hyperinflation of this, of the commodity markets, especially recently, and also with what Lynn put out with this recent forecast, you're starting to see more and more people kind of reassessing their idea of wealth. And in some of the meetings that I've had recently in the Congress, and also some of the impromptu conversations that I've had with aides either on the telephone or in the offices, people are a lot more receptive to discussing this idea of wealth, which can then get you into a more developed conversation and a more developed idea of infrastructure projects and then funding infrastructure projects through these capital budget mechanisms that Hamilton was proposing, which, you know, LaRouche is saying makes us specifically and defines us specifically as a different form of economics and a mere monetary form of economy. And I think when you address this problem that people think that we're in this new services monetarist economy, you can really draw out two things. One is the history of these monetary economies and this imperialist mindset. Regardless of what the produce of these things are, the fact is that they're relying on a certain amount of slave labor, and there's no, you know, broadband or wireless internet that's going to feed people in Africa or or deal with this growing problem with our lack of production in the United States. But then also you have the question of what is the United States? You can really develop this idea of what is a credit-based economy and why is that necessary to have a form of government that exists for the general welfare. And when you can get people in the Congress to really start questioning these kind of ideas of exactly what the philosophical idea behind our government is and what are the policies that are necessary to keep that going, and then to really draw out the distinction between a Rooseveltian approach, a LaRouche approach to fixing this economic crisis, and the historically relevant and scary dictatorships and oligarchies that historically have also capitalized on such poor economic systems, you can get people to really see themselves as living in a critical turning point in current history. And then they see their role in the Congress as being all the more important. So essentially these questions about, you know, an information technology society is really coming to a head right now as this whole financial system implodes upon itself.
Mm-hmm. Right. Harley, let me ask you, because you may be going to Texas, I understand, this week, and the same thing is involved, right? You're seeing people in the West that might have thought you could get some kind of fair, they called it level playing field in the past, out of world trade and agriculture, or you could get an okay deal, but now all bets are off on that, and people are changing their mind on even parity pricing, which used to be called outmoded and old-fashioned, right?
Well, I think the important thing is the way Lynn put it in the webcast on Thursday when he went through this point that you now have all this populist sentiment being whipped up on the question of the gas prices and oil prices. And so, you know, the president says he's going to probe this, which is one of the biggest jokes going around. If he wants to look into what's going on, why doesn't he just get the list of people that Cheney met with on the Energy Task Force? But what's clear, what Lynn went through in a very brief part of his opening remarks was this question of the collapse of the system, that it's not just oil, it's gold, it's copper. We see even the threat that you won't be able to afford food soon, because now that they've driven out the independent producers, the family farmers and ranchers, they're turning the system into a government by cartels. Destroy the nation state and have the cartels control all the commodities, and at that point you have the hyperinflation locked in. So as someone from Washington was just saying, that this is something which changes everything. The new orthodoxy of the new economy should have been blown out beginning in March 2000, but it wasn't. People clung to it. The tech sector will come back. The new economy is the only way. And people are dying because of the new economy. Nations are going beyond bankruptcy into self-cannibalization because of the so-called new economy, which is really nothing other than the old feudalism and the Nazi kind of fascist policies of the 30s of the Synarchist International. So under those circumstances, you get Republican farmers in West Texas who are saying, maybe we should look at FDR again. Maybe FDR wasn't so bad. We're getting ranchers in California who are climbing out of their ideological bunkers and saying, gee, everything we're trying isn't working. You know, the president's popularity rating is probably inflated at 32%, what the polls are saying, but that just shows that it's collapsing. The only problem that we have to address here is, why have the Democrats not moved on this? And this is why the Rowitin question is so important. Rowitin is opposed to parity. He's opposed to the kind of programs like the CCC or the WPA or the TVA, the FDR policies of the New Deal in the 1930s, which brought us out of a depression. Rowitin opposes that. He's for a corporate cartelization of the world under a global fascist economy. And so that's the problem in the Democratic Party. And we have to be clear on this, what we're saying at the convention. Yes, Bush and Cheney have to go, and we'll get rid of them. But the question is not just to cheer on the train wreck of this administration. It's, we have to have in place the ideas that can put the economy back on track, produce jobs, produce real wealth. And so it's not just enough to say the current mode doesn't work. You have to have an alternative. And that's why what they're doing in D.C. today with the Cadre School, the discussion of history and physical economy from the standpoint of the great classical physical scientists, Leibniz, Kepler, Gauss. Similarly, the work that's being done on the West Coast and in Mexico, where the LIM are doing a tremendously courageous job of transforming the elections there. That's what is required now, that kind of courage. Those people who are supporters of the LaRouche movement, who are listening to the show today, should send in donations, should do whatever they can to get the literature out, to participate in this transformation that's occurring sort of at 1 second to midnight as the system is about to completely implode.
Right. Let me ask Miles and Danny. In fact, were you – sometimes you're right up against it in being in Washington with things like the Democrats holding the innovation agenda events or something, and – you still get the IT or broadband will save the world. Is that, did you run into that?
I think there were a few people who may have run into things of that sort.
Uh-huh.
Although I think the most characteristic thing, which at least what I noticed, with the huge inflation in commodities in general,
yes,
what it's finally doing is it's really demystifying the awe that people have for the financial system as some great phenomena, and it really just exposes that all it is just a big, you know, cyst of corruption. You know, that it's not just you know, an invisible hand regulated financial system. That it's a broken down system. So the with the housing bubble, you know, there was one meeting in a New York office where the person who was met with who's one of these people who've been around for longer than the congressman, you know, is really hitting at just fear and the insanity at the level of the housing bubble. So it's kind of a wake-up call in one sense, at least on the financial side. I don't know if in Miles or anyone else's meetings if there were any more specific, you know, actives or problems on the solution side.
Well, I think you hit on it. I mean, the system is obviously coming down. And that's not the only reason why people are taking Mr. LaRouche's warning so seriously. It's obviously coupled with the fact that he is the most accurate long-term and short-term economic forecaster in modern history. But it's also pretty evident just from these empirical observations of some of the recent effects of this system. The hyperinflation, I think copper was mentioned. The gas price obviously is affecting the majority of the United States. And this housing bubble, too, is propping up the whole system. People don't necessarily understand the whole interrelationship here with the banking networks and how this is being run with derivatives, et cetera. The more that we're looking into it and getting a more sensuous grasp on just the insanity of this, really, I mean, it just goes in to hammer the point that this system is completely bunk. And any conversation that is attempting to propose a Band-Aid solution or to divert this, whether it be in the Congress or in the field, is just not hitting at the real issue. And so what this crisis tends to do is get people to start hypothesizing, at least, what the real issue is. When they encounter people, especially in the street, and it's often ironic for them that these are younger people, if they are indeed older, that there is people that A, can identify the real problem, because a lot of people are in a kind of veil of what the media is putting out, which is, you know, that the gas prices are, you know, what George Bush thinks, right? That the gas prices are being hiked up by oil companies. When they can be explained not only the problem but also a viable solution, and that this solution requires a reversion of policy back to where the United States was intended to be, back to where the United States was, then you start to see people really not only grappling with these ideas, but coming to really want to know them.
Thank you. Let me throw one thing in here. There is an emailer, Harley, that, mm-hmm. and I turn to you, Miles and Danny, you could add to this, but picking up on what you said earlier on, the emailer is asking about what he calls, in quotes, the survivability of Dick Cheney right now, or the Bush-Cheney administration. You mentioned state actions. He's asking about, simultaneously, you got the special prosecutor Fitzgerald. There's a lot of thought that perhaps Karl Rove will see an indictment within a few days. But he asks you to develop this more on what you foresee that could come about in this.
Well, I think the story out in Washington, which still has to be confirmed in its source reports, Jason Leopold has covered it, but there's a rumor around that Rove has decided to go over to the prosecution with his story to avoid indictment, which means he would be pinning it all in the office of the vice president. Now, there are a lot of rumors around this. I don't put a lot of faith in these kinds of rumors, simply because then you're depending too much on a legal outcome and on basically leaving it in the hands of the competing leaks through the media. However, it is clear that Cheney and Bush have committed impeachable acts. And this gets to why the Democrats are holding back. What would be the alternative? If you're going to take out a president and a vice president on impeachable acts, which needs to happen because there's always the danger that Cheney will go ahead with a preemptive nuclear strike against Iran or something similar, what will you replace them with? And we have to have an absolutely clear agenda in this country, a break with the globalization policies, the free trade policies, a break with the sophistry of the high tech, and a recognition that what the United States has done in its history under constitutional processes has been to develop in-depth physical economy through infrastructure, through advancing industry, through an emphasis on research and development, through advanced agricultural educational work, scientific research and implementation. And all of this depends on federal credit. So if Bush and Cheney were to go, Lyndon LaRouche is convinced that he could pull together through the Senate a governable, survivable coalition. Whether it would occur depends on two things. One, the momentum against Cheney and Bush. And I think we're seeing, besides California, there's an impeachment resolution in the Illinois House and the Vermont legislature. But then secondly, the alternative being clear. Otherwise, you just go into a kind of chaos. And under those circumstances, there's no survivability because, as Lynn warned, this economy is headed toward an outer limit sustainability till October. And when we say sustainability, it's not very livable right now. Foreclosures are up. Food prices are going out of control. People can't afford to drive to the grocery store even anymore. So the survivability depends on organizing.
Right. And we have another email. But Miles and Danny, do you want to add anything about this at the moment, or shall I ask you the other?
I think you can continue.
Yeah, because let me ask, tell you that Eugene sends an email that about these meetings you've been talking about with certain congressional aides and offices and congressmen. He wants you to summarize who is anything going at all in terms of congressional action to introduce bills in the auto industry or to face the economic collapse overall.
Well, I mean, I'm not on the real inside of this process. I can tell you that there are definitely Congress offices every single week being confronted with this idea. And if there is anything that's in the works or that's on the back burner, what Mr. LaRouche went through on Thursday and what we did in the Congress on Wednesday and Friday will really serve as a catalyst to get this on the floor. So, you know, having this presence with the union work, having this presence with the machine tool workers on Capitol Hill for these weeks of action, with all the youth here, is really critical, I think, for getting this process going. And really, I mean, what it's going to take is for these Democrats to get some courage. And that is what, you know, besides the particular policies that Mr. LaRouche is proposing, i.e. the auto sector and the banking system, et cetera, one of the real focuses that we're driving on is actually delivering a 2x4 to the Democratic Party to really wake these guys up, because they have to see themselves as living in history right now. And this economic system is coming down. So if there is anything mulling in the background, it's sure to come out soon, given Mr. LaRouche's 2x4 that he gave to them on Thursday.
Also, Marcia, you may know something more about this, but Lynn is drafting a legislative proposal to pull together a picture of what we can do to put 51 plants back online, to reopen the plants, rehire workers, retool, and begin a process of federal funding as a bankruptcy reorganization for the parts companies, the steel companies, the auto companies, to get production going. So people can look on the website, the LaRouche PAC website, probably within the next 24 to 48 hours, to see the legislation that Lynn is putting together.
Yes, to underscore that, and he's ordered a commission to kind of crash survey to get the right parameters and really go for this. This is it. This is the hardcore, on-the-ground work that has to be done. Were you going to add something, Danny?
Well, just that as of yesterday, this auto retooling DVD just came delivered to the D.C. office. And
okay.
At least we did our lobbying on Wednesday, but at least yesterday in this one meeting, we were able to get that out. The guy was definitely going to watch it. So I'm very excited about that because the auto retooling DVD, which I've seen myself, it's a much more substantial way of getting that picture across of what this retooling process is. So that should act to really inspire and make it more tangible to some of these, you know, D.C. offices, which really don't have much connection at all to what production is. So this auto retooling DVD must be used as a really good tool as well.
Marcia, let me add, the Leesburg bureaucracy worked. We did get the DVDs for the California convention, and they're getting out to delegates here with a great amount of enthusiasm.
That's great. Well, it's nothing's real till you see it on TV, right? No, I'm just speaking, making some fun here because we're in the final seconds. And thank you all so much for all the action you're promoting and doing. And we remind everyone, resources is what makes it happen. But we must sign off now. Do listen again next week. That would be May 6th from 3 to 4 in the afternoon for the LaRouche Show, Eastern Time on www.larouchepub.com. Thank you, Harley Schlanger, Danny McCready, and Miles Robinson. This is Marcia Mary Baker.